Good morning, everyone. Let me first of all thank you for having me here and having the judiciary here. I want to start off by thanking the Governor's Academy, and let me compliment you on your very, very ambitious agenda. I look at the goals that your goals of this program. First of all, to help the participants, you, gain a knowledge of the government. We are the third branch of government and probably the least understood, and it's really important that I'm here today to give you an overview of the Maryland judiciary. Your other goal is to raise your achievement and help raise the achievement of the students. That's very important. In fact, the reason we are filming this today is because in the near future, we intend to take this show on the road. We want to go to the high schools, the junior high schools, and really touch base not only with the teachers, but also the students, because it's very important that they realize what happens once they graduate and how the system works. To create a network of teachers in terms of understanding what each of you do, and also have a network so you can develop a stronger network. Also to develop a network with other government agencies and other branches of government. I compliment you on such an ambitious agenda. This morning, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you an overview of the process. Professor Levy is going to be here later on in the day. I understand he gave you a lot of reading. Well, this is not going to be a lot of reading, but this should give you a context in terms of give you a better understanding of some of the things that you read, some of your home assignments that Professor Levy gave you. Professor Levy, and he'll be here soon, is one of the best lawyers in the state of Maryland. I had the pleasure of attending law school with Andy Levy, and you really have a treat this morning when he comes in. What we're going to do is the Maryland judiciary. Give you an understanding of what I do and how the different court systems work. First of all, the court system is set up. We have two appellate levels. Highest court is the Court of Appeals. Second highest level, Intermediate Court of Special Appeals. We have the Circuit Court, where all the jury trials, the more serious cases, are handled. We have the District Court, which I'm responsible for, which is probably, it's also known as the People's Court. And as we go through this morning, you'll get a flavor of why it's considered the People's Court. We also have District Court Commissioners. This morning, to give you a flavor of how this works and how we achieve this mission, and our mission is, in Maryland, is to provide equal and exact justice to all of those who come to court. What does this mean to you? What I want you to do is imagine one morning you're getting ready to start your day, and you walk out in the hallway and you see a student. This student's name is Johnny. Johnny happens to be a 19-year-old. He didn't progress through the system as quickly as he should have. Johnny's out in the hallway, and you see Johnny scribbling something on the wall. You walk up and you see that Johnny has scribbled on the wall, "There is a bomb." Now, what I want you to think about is, in your typical day, how would you handle this? Could you imagine that by Johnny standing in the hallway writing, "There is a bomb," that this is going to become a major case in the state of Maryland? Well, let's make it a major case. And I want you to think, to get a flavor of you're in the hallway and how this can expand through the system and how you can become a witness and how, based on what you see and how you react, how the courts react and how we do our business. First of all, let's make sure you have your handouts. You should have a blue handout, which includes a chart, overview of this of the different courts. Also, we have a discussion of our website, discussion of the juvenile court, and just the overall handouts. You should also have the PowerPoint that we're going to go through this morning, and you're going to have a case. Now, I did not give you this case to read earlier, simply because two reasons. First of all, I want you to think through this. Secondly, I knew that Professor Levy gave you a lot of reading, so I wasn't going to give you any additional reading. When you get the chance to read this later on, you will find that I have altered the facts just a bit. But this is a real case here in the state of Maryland, and it shows really the goal is to show how the court goes through a determination of legislative intent. I've changed the facts just a bit. When you read this case, you'll see that this individual, Jason, was actually processed through the juvenile system. From the juvenile system in the circuit court, it then went up to the Court of Special Appeals and the Court of Appeals. Now, when you walked up on Johnny out in the hallway, Johnny took the eraser and he started to erase the word bomb. Okay? What did you do? You called the principal. You explained to the principal what you saw. Now, in your mind, you may think, well, this is a simple case. We can take care of this. This is the average administration in any educational institution on a daily basis. But let's see what could happen in this case. Let's assume that the principal comes out, takes a picture of the writing on the wall, brings Johnny to the office, calls Johnny's parents, and also decides to call the police. The principal takes no further action. The building's not evacuated. The police department is not called. The bomb squad is not called. The dogs don't come over and sniff the building. All the principal does is just basically call the police and bring Johnny to the principal's office. Police officer comes over, local police officer. Police officer decides to read Johnny his Miranda warnings. What are Miranda warnings? Generally, you read your Miranda warnings when a police officer has a person in custodial interrogation. What does that mean? Basically, when a police officer walks up to you, and if in your mind you cannot leave, then you're in custodial, you're in custody, a form of custody. Now, the police officer could walk up to Johnny and just say, look, tell me what happened. Because the police officer does have the right to approach and conduct a preliminary investigation or preliminary questions can be posed. But in this case, the police officer decides to advise Johnny of his Miranda warnings. What does Johnny do? I did it. Yeah, I wrote on the wall. So what does the police officer decide to do? Police officer is going to file charges. Now, let's start the process. First of all, the charging document. The charging document, and what I want you to really start to think about is the police officer is going to charge Johnny with two crimes, a felony. First of all, to threaten to explode a destructive device. Remember the facts, okay? A misdemeanor. Willfully disturb or otherwise willfully prevent the orderly conduct of the activities, administration, or classes of any institution of elementary, secondary, or higher education. This statute was enacted in 1969-1970 by the Maryland legislature. Think back in 69-1970. Reverend King was just killed. End of the Vietnam War, a lot of unrest on campuses, a lot of unrest in the different institutions. In fact, let me give you my personal experience. One afternoon at the Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, some of the African-American students decided we were going to take over the cafeteria. For a couple of hours, we took over the cafeteria. We were standing in protest of the Polytechnic administration in terms of how things were working at Poly. We're just being militant and belligerent. We had one or two upperclassmen who were deciding to see if they could recruit some new Black Panthers on campus. Vice Principal came down, said, okay. Vice Principal Peterson, he was the enforcer. He came down and said, okay, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to give you a half an hour to sit in here and think about if you're going to go to the Baltimore Detention Center today, or those of you who have some future aspirations, think about where you want to go. So Ben Clyburn going, just interviewed with Senator Sarbanes on my way to beautiful Colorado Springs Air Force Academy, I kind of thought to myself, do I want to go to the detention center today, or do I want to say, okay, fine, I've made my statement, exit stage left. Well, let's just say I ended up going to the Air Force Academy. But this was at a time, this was when the legislature was responding to this type of activity. So keep that in mind. Now let's start the process. How does someone, and what we're going to do is, this is a criminal case. We're going to take you through the process with a criminal case. How do we start a criminal process in Maryland? First of all, a police officer can start the process if a police officer has a felony, probable cause that a felony has been committed. The police officer can arrest the person. If it's a misdemeanor, how do you determine misdemeanor or a felony? Well, in this case, we outlined, we had two charges. We had the felony, threatened to explode a device, or willfully disturb the activities. A misdemeanor, generally the police officer, the misdemeanor has to be committed in the police officer's presence. What if the police officer's not involved? What if a citizen decides to file charges against your friendly neighbor? Well, what you do is you go to your court commissioner. Court commissioner has two choices. The court commissioner can issue an arrest warrant, or a court commissioner can issue a summons, which basically a police officer takes, serves it on you, and says, look, you have a court date, you've been charged, you have to appear in court. Part of my duties as chief judge for the state of Maryland for the district court, I am responsible, I have the authority over 254 court commissioners located throughout the state of Maryland. We have 24-hour, 365-day service. Court commissioners have several primary responsibilities. In cases where criminal charges are lodged against someone, there's a review of an application of a statement of facts that's produced by a citizen to see if there's probable cause that a crime has been committed. The court commissioner also decides whether or not the person should have a bail if there's been an arrest, whether or not the person should be released on their recognizance, whether or not a bail should be set, or whether or not that person should be held on a no bail status. Also recently, the past several years, there's been an increase in the area of domestic violence. We have given the commissioners the authority, when court's not in session, court commissioners can issue what we call interim protective orders. For the victims of domestic violence, they go before the commissioner. The commissioner can issue an order to the abuser to stay away, not to abuse. It's interim in the sense that once the court's in session, then the second stage is that a judge reviews that. Let's go through the process. So let's assume in this situation, Johnny's arrested. Johnny is taken to the court commissioner. Given the fact that Johnny's 19 years old, is this a really serious crime? Johnny has a stable home. The commissioner will probably release Johnny on his own recognizance. What's the next step? Well, Johnny's going to appear at district court. District court is the face of the Maryland judiciary system. We are the court of first impression. As chief judge, I am responsible for 34 locations throughout the state of Maryland. I'm responsible for 1,300 employees. I have 112 judges. The judges are, they have 10-year terms. For a lawyer who wants to become a judge, generally the way it works for district court, the person goes before nominating committees. They're vetted through those committees. There's a list that's forwarded to the governor. The governor makes a 10-year appointment. That individual then has to go to the state senate to be confirmed by the senate. Again, we have 254 commissioners. And you say, Judge Clyburn, how do you run the state of Maryland with all these employees and locations? The way I do it is I have 12 administrative judges. In each district, we have 12 districts throughout the state of Maryland. The administrative judges report to me. On a daily basis, the administrative judges basically run the affairs of the local courthouses. Court commissioners, we have a ministry of commissioners in each district also. Clerks, we have a ministry of clerks in each location. At headquarters in Annapolis Court of Appeals building where I'm located, I have four assistant chief clerks that's responsible for finance, engineering, operations, legislation. District Court. Again, this is where most people experience the judicial system. When I started my career, I was counsel to the Motor Vehicle Administration, and I find that in many respects, the District Court is similar to the Motor Vehicle Administration in that we have a very high volume of individuals coming in doing business with us, and based on what we do, individuals develop an impression of the judicial system or the judiciary. We also have a lot of pro se litigants. Pro se litigants are the individuals who are not represented by a lawyer. These are the individuals who want to file small contract claims and things of that sort. We are very user friendly in that if you look at some of the forms that we gave out, we really help individuals. They really can handle their own legal affairs by way of use of forms and also the internet. There are no jury trials. All of the cases that appear in district court, the judge decides the case. The judge hears the facts, hears the evidence, the judge applies the law, the judge makes the decision. To give you an idea of the variety of cases we handle all of the motor vehicle cases. The minor traffic, we handle the serious traffic, DWIs, driving on suspended and revoked. We handle the boating violations. We handle the red light cameras. We handle the parking docket. We also handle the small claims. These are the small contract claims under $5,000, where the rules of evidence and procedure are very relaxed, where citizens can come in and basically tell their stories. We handle the civil lawsuits, a lot of auto torts, which we have exclusive jurisdiction in those cases up to $25,000. We have exclusive jurisdiction over landlord-tenant. When I first started the bench in Baltimore City, I was a judge there for 10 years. One of my first assignments was rent court. If you ever want to experience the district court, go to rent court in Baltimore City, because for 1 week every month, every day, you have 3,000 cases on your docket. About 20% of those individuals actually come into court, and it's an experience, but it's a very, very important court. Domestic violence. We have specialized domestic violence courts where we have set up throughout the district court, where we have specially trained prosecutors, the judges are specially trained, and we have just a special docket where all of the domestic violence related cases come into that one docket. Peace orders. Cases where individuals don't fall within the definition of domestic abuse. For example, your neighbor. If you have a dispute with your neighbor, you can also go in and get a peace order, which is much like the protective order that you get in the domestic violence context. Give you an idea of the numbers. For fiscal year 2004, we handled 529,000 landlord-tenant cases, 362,000 civil cases, 214,000 criminal cases, and roughly 1.4 million traffic cases. So in your given day in terms of your traffic docket, for example, in Baltimore City, the minor traffic docket, you know, speeders, red lighters, and things of that sort, we typically have three dockets, four different locations. The 9 o'clock docket is usually about 110 cases. 11 o'clock docket's 100 cases, with the 2 o'clock docket being about 75 cases. So again, you can imagine what we do. Now, as a new chief judge, I am in the process of moving the court in a different direction. The court, the criminal dockets generally have been in the past, you try a case, you place a person on probation, and you hope that that person makes it through probation. Well, since the past 10 years, we've seen an influx in drug cases. We've seen an influx in cases with mental illness. We've seen an influx of domestic violence. we are now moving in a direction what we call specialized therapeutic courts. What we're doing is we're trying to look at those special situations where we can get to the root of the problem. For example, drug courts. Individuals, sadly, that are addicted to heroin or cocaine, you see them going in and out of the system, in and out of the system. Well, the new drug courts, we're trying to help individuals get into drug treatment. We're trying to put some structure around their lives so they can become productive citizens. DWI courts, in and out of the system, in and out of the system because of alcohol. We're responding to that. We're setting up, much like the drug courts, we're setting up special DUI courts. And what we're doing is we're concentrating on treatment. We're giving the individual a structured treatment program. They're on probation. There's constant contact with the treatment providers. And we really take into account relapse. We want to work with individuals. And it's not all about sending individuals to jail, because I think that's not productive in the long run. Early resolution court. Early resolution court is a court that we use a lot of community service. A lot of cases where you may have someone who has a family who decides they're out one Friday night and they decide to approach a prostitute. Or you have someone who just does something that's not real violent, like minor theft or minor destruction of property. The individual has, everything other than this one situation. They have a job. They have a family, and then they're first-time offenders. We're hoping that because that person has been processed through the system, they have spent a night at Central Booking, that we can say, look, we're going to give you 25, 35, 50 hours of community service. If you perform this community service, you will not come back in the system. So it's really designed for first-time offenders. First-time drug offenders, the individual who comes in, and I can tell you, I was the chairman of the program that put the early resolution court together. I can tell you where the light went on in my head. One afternoon, I was sitting in the Eastern District. I had an individual who came in who was charged with possession, one cap of cocaine. This individual was about 34 years old. He had two children, married, systems engineer at one of the local TV stations. He had never had any other problem. College educated, everything was going on, but he was a recreational user of cocaine. When the case was called, I looked at the state's attorney. I said, why is this person in the system? Why don't we try to divert this individual into a treatment program, give this person a chance to work through the treatment, do community service, and after spending the night at Central Booking in Baltimore City, do you think that this person is really going to come back into the system? State's attorney said, well, Judge, the problem is this person has a prior record. I said, what's the record? A 1986 open container charge. That person couldn't go into diversion because of a 1986 open container. Does this make sense? Are we really meeting our goal of delivering justice by treating this person this way? Conclusion is no. So we set up a diversion program for first-time drug offenders. Domestic violence courts, again, we have specialized dockets that handle only domestic violence. The new movement is in the area of mental illness. We have a lot of individuals who come in are just mentally ill, and believe me, jail's not the place for them. If we can set up a structured treatment and help them become productive citizens, we now have set up specialized mental health courts. We have a mental health diversion court up in Harford County where at the time of bail review, if we know that person has a problem, we divert them before trial. Alternative dispute resolution. This is a new area that we're moving into. This is where citizens can come in for mediation or settlement of small claims. We have mediation and settlement officers that will meet them. They'll have confidential communications. They'll try to work something out short of going to a trial. Because what happens at trial? Someone wins, someone loses. At mediation, if we could get you in a room and you can go back and forth with your neighbor and you can work out your property line dispute, or you can agree not to throw whatever on your neighbor's lawn, and you can sit around that table and get a healthy understanding, and the case is mediated, guess what? They walk away holding hands. They become better neighbors. No one gets a criminal case. No one gets a criminal record. We can concentrate on more serious cases. And the most important thing, each one of those individuals walk away and say, look, I was part of the resolution. I feel good, not only about myself, my neighbor, and also the judiciary. So we're moving in that area of alternative dispute resolution. Now, let's look at the evidence at the district court involving Johnny. Again, a judge is hearing this case. The police officer testifies that Johnny admitted that he wrote on the wall, there is a bomb. Well, you're saying, well, how could a police officer say what Johnny said? Isn't that hearsay evidence? Well, this is an exception to hearsay. It's called an admission by a defendant. You, the teacher, of course, you're going to have to come and testify. You're thinking, I have to testify in a criminal trial. Your testimony would be what you saw. You saw it on the wall. Now, the police officer, the judge would have to decide that case after hearing Johnny's side of the story as to whether or not, beyond reasonable doubt, a crime has been committed. That's the standard of proof in a criminal case. In this case, the judge decides that yes, simply because he wrote up on the wall, there is a bomb, that's an unauthorized entry on the wall, and because the principal and the teacher had to take some time to come out and look at that, clean it up, and that amounts to a disturbance. Now think about it, 1969, 1970, was the legislature really thinking about this type of conduct? Think about it in your daily function. Do you call the police? Is this really a disturbance? Or is this something you do day in and day out in terms of your performance as a teacher? Well, Johnny doesn't agree with the district court judge, so Johnny decides he and his lawyer, they're going to take an appeal up to the circuit court. The circuit court is the second level trial level here in Maryland. The circuit court has 24 locations located in the county and one in Baltimore City. The circuit court's a little different in that it's funded locally, whereas the district court, when I have to get money for the district court, I have to go to the state legislature. It handles approximately 300,000 cases, 146 judges statewide. Those judges, and these are most of the judges that you read about in the paper in terms of elections, these judges have to go through a process, a nominating committee. Their then names are forwarded to the governor. The governor appoints. Then that judge has to run an election. Also, individuals who can't get through the process, and if they're a lawyer, then they can run in an election. So what happens is you have very heated and contested elections for circuit court judges. There's no chief judge of the circuit court. Instead, the circuit court judges throughout the state elect a chair of the judicial conference who serves for a two-year term. Circuit court handles all the major civil cases. Large auto accidents, malpractice cases. They handle all the serious cases, the murders, rapes, the robberies. The district court, we have very limited jurisdiction in these serious cases. We have preliminary hearings where we determine whether or not it's sufficient probable cause to forward the case to circuit court. Here's all juvenile cases and also all domestic related cases in the sense of divorces and things of that sort. All jury trial cases where 12 citizens are selected from the voter registration rolls. They hear cases and they determine whether or not a person is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt or whether or not in the civil case there's a preponderance of the evidence to determine the case. Now this is something that's unique in Maryland and something we're working on that you may see something if you read the papers about what the legislature is doing is de novo appeal. When a case is appealed from the district court, it goes up de novo. De novo means that when it gets to the circuit court, the case is completely retried from scratch. It's not heard on the record, which some people think that that's a waste of judicial resources and it's a real burden on witnesses. That will be a debate that you will hear in the future as to whether or not we will change de novo appeals. Circuit court also has specialized courts, such as drug court and such as they're working on mental health courts.
is the grand jury?
The grand jury is at the circuit court. The grand jury process is used to investigate criminal cases. My resume, for 2 years, I spent time using the grand jury throughout the state of Maryland, investigating and prosecuting white collar crime. Basically, the grand jury are citizens that come in, they serve for a period of time, they have the authority to issue subpoenas, and the investigations are conducted in secrecy. We use as an investigative tool. The grand jury determines whether or not basically there's sufficient evidence to return what we call an indictment, which is a charging document, much like the summons that you see at the district court. Now, circuit court involving Johnny's case, again, Johnny decides to have a judge tried instead of a jury. Here, the judge, again, just like the district court, agrees with the district court, but makes an independent finding that because Johnny made that entry, it was unauthorized, and because the principal had to come out and look at it, it constituted a disturbance. Johnny doesn't agree with this decision. So Johnny and his lawyer decides they're going to go up to the appellate level. They decide to go to the Court of Special Appeals. And they go to the Court of Special Appeals on one legal argument. This conduct, making this entry on the wall, does this fall within the definition of this statute? Is it really what the legislature intended? Or do you really need evidence of an actual disturbance, a riot, evacuation, things of that sort? Now let's talk about the Court of Special Appeals. Court of Special Appeals is our intermediate appellate court. It handles the bulk of appeals from the circuit court. We have 13 judges. The judges generally sit in panels of three. They have 10-year appointments and they run in retention elections. Standard of review, and here we're just going to look at a legal interpretation, de novo, which means that legal interpretation, the judges at the Court of Special Appeals will make a completely independent legal interpretation separate from the circuit court judge. If it was an evidentiary issue as to whether or not there was sufficient evidence, they apply the standard of abuse of discretion. Here, the Court of Special Appeals tries to do what we call statutory interpretation. Basically, the court is taking the language in the statute and they're going to go back and see, did the legislature really intend to cover this type of conduct? Now, when I say a judge does statutory interpretation, in the first instance, that judge should look at the plain meaning of the words. If it's ambiguous, then they go back and they look at the legislative record to determine legislative intent. In this particular case, this was somewhat unique because in 1969, 1970, the legislature, the General Assembly, really wasn't keeping detailed legislative records. So what this court actually did was they took a look at newspaper articles to kind of get a flavor and a context of what was the legislature thinking back in 1969. Well, I can tell you, part of my responsibility is to go to the legislature and testify in committees. And I can tell you a newspaper account may not necessarily capture the true intent of what the legislature was thinking when it enacted a law. But the court can take a look at those to take a look to determine legislative intent. Here, the Court of Appeals, after looking at the legislative intent, reading the newspaper articles, comes out with a decision that it agrees with Johnny, saying that Johnny's actions did not constitute a disturbance or the prevention of the orderly activities in the school. Essentially, the court says that he just simply wrote on the wall. What do you think as a teacher, day in, day out? State's attorney disagrees this time, and the school board, or the school disagrees. Instead, they want to take it up to the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in the state of Maryland. Court of Appeals. Chief Judge Bell is the chief judge for the state of Maryland. He's my boss. He also is responsible for all levels of court. How does Chief Judge Bell manage to run all levels of court? Well, he has committees. He has chief judges on the different levels of court. He also has a cabinet, which consists of the chief judges from the different levels of court. Most of the cases heard at the Court of Appeals are by way of certiorari. That's basically the court has discretion as to whether or not they're going to hear the cases. Now, there are a few cases, if it's appealed, they have to hear them. Death penalty cases, redistricting, they have to hear those cases. Oral arguments are before seven judges as opposed to three judges. And again, they take a look at legislative intent. And much like the Court of Special Appeals, they do the statutory interpretation. When you read this decision, you'll see that there was a real debate as to whether or not newspaper articles should be considered. Here, the Court of Appeals basically decided that there's a level of disturbance that's simply part of school activity that is intended to be dealt with within the context of the school administration, your daily affairs. The only sensible reading of the statute is there must be an actual disturbance, but the disturbance must be more than a minimal one. This is your typical day. Because the principal didn't evacuate the building or call the bomb squad, they really thought that this wasn't the type of activity that would fall within the statute. What do you think? This gives you a flavor of what just a simple matter can progress throughout the system. This gives you a flavor of here you are conducting your daily affairs, and all of a sudden you become the star witness in a case. This is how it happens. This is also gives you a flavor of what judges do on a daily basis. And what we try to do is interpret the law. We try to apply the law in a fair and consistent manner, and you can agree or not agree, but it gives you a flavor of how we do our business.